Shrink Wrap Radio number 281, Short Interviews from the Positive Psychology Congress and the Laughter Yoga Session.
And now it's time for Dr. Dave and Shrink Wrap Radio.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave. And Shrink Wrap Radio is playing on again.
Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
Today's episode is a two-parter. First, it features short interviews with attendees at the Second World Congress on Positive Psychology held in Philadelphia earlier this summer. The second part features brief interviews with the teacher and students at a local laughter yoga session that I recently attended in Petaluma, California. Please see the show notes at shrinkwrapradio.com for more background details on these events. Now, without further ado, here are some comments from attendees at the Positive Psychology Congress.
Okay, well, I've just been sitting through a workshop here on strengths and sitting next to Brad, who turns out is a relatively new listener to Shrink Wrap Radio. And so I'm just treasuring that coincidence or synchronicity. Brad, tell us a little bit about what brings you here.
I'm a student at Arizona State University, and I'm attending with my associate who's practicing. And I'm interested in, I'd like to merge, think about merging positive psychology with persuasion and interpersonal influence.
Okay, and is that, when you talk about merging them, are you talking about in terms of research or in terms of some kind of applied work?
Well, I'm definitely more into application. I have been sitting through some of the organizational change lectures, and the question that keeps popping up is, well, how about when the executives do not want positive change? How, when they benefit from having sort of a factory model of their organization and having the administration or employees suffer, and they don't want to change, how can you get them to start adopting those positive psychology concepts?
Oh, yes. Well, that's a good, worthy challenge for you to take up. Now, this was a workshop about strengths and based on the VIA instrument, which people can find at authentichappiness.com, I think, or maybe authentichappiness.org. Do you happen to know your top signature strengths offhand?
I have yet to take the VIA, but I think creativity and humor will probably pop up there pretty high.
Okay, well, I won't put you on the spot and ask you to say something funny.
yeah, it's kind of, I'm one of those conversational humorists where, you know, you got to have the back and forth and somebody has to act like they're too serious so that I can be sarcastic and make fun of them.
Okay, well, we're at the end of a long day right now, so we're not even going to attempt that, but thanks a lot for speaking with me.
Hey, you bet. Great to talk to you and meet you. Thank you.
Okay, I'm in the poster session now, and let me have you introduce yourself to our audience.
I'm Cynthia Crothers from the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and my colleague is Colleen Hood from Brock University.
Okay, and tell us about your poster, what you've been up to.
Well, my background is in therapeutic recreation, and the focus of therapeutic recreation is to enhance the well-being of people with disabilities and other disadvantaged populations. And historically, the focus has been on problem resolution or deficit reduction. So what we've done is tried to bring positive psychology to the field and looking at, rather than addressing problems, to really elevate the well-being of people with illnesses and disabilities, primarily through leisure, which is a fairly unrecognized area in positive psychology, but a great context for positive emotion, personal growth, creation of meaning in life.
So what kinds of leisure activities have you brought in as interventions?
Well, one of the things that we really look at is leisure that's meaningful to the person. And so any type of experience that in which they experience joy, connection to other people, a sense of accomplishment, a sense of contentment, can bring that positive emotion, which has all kinds of benefit to somebody. But it's also a context for stretching oneself, you know, whether it's through taking on an art, or climbing a mountain, or planting a garden, or training a pet, you know, that having coffee with a friend. So it depends on what kind of resonates with the individual. So we start with assessment, and we have them look at trying on different experiences and see what fits and what's kind of true to themselves. One thing that's really important for people with disability and illnesses is oftentimes they're the recipients of care, the recipients of service, and yet we know that there's great benefit in them helping other people and
helping
out. Yeah.
Yes.
So we focus on kind of helping them create the environmental supports that they need in order to be effective, actually trying to be advocates so that the environment is more receptive, but really looking at the domain of outside of work, what can you do to create a robust, wonderful life for yourself? And so that's the focus.
Well, this sounds like a wonderful focus for us all. So thank you very much and keep up the good work.
Well, thank you for your time. Yeah.
Okay, you are?
My name's Dave Sheeran.
And you're the author, I guess you're one of the co-authors of a book called Smart Strengths. Maybe you can tell us about the book and what led you to take that project on.
All right. My co-authors and I all met in the Masters of Applied Positive Psychology program at Penn.
Oh, yeah.
And when we got out 5 years ago, we started working with schools on this. And this is the story of what we found out about how to take this into schools and what teachers and parents and coaches are doing with it once they find it.
Oh, that sounds good. And where can people find the book if they're interested in it?
They can get it at www.smartstrengths.com or through Amazon, either one.
That's good, yeah. And so maybe you could give us an anecdote or something from the book, so something that you learned, something pivotal that maybe listeners could profit from.
I will tell you what we've heard from teachers, and we've heard teachers two things. One, talk about renewing their passion for teaching, finding a new way to connect with their teaching. But also the interesting thing is people who've been on faculty together for years, going through the training that we do and then coming out and saying, I now see this person that I've worked with for years in a different light. I see how their strengths are coming out, and it makes me think about them differently. It's improving our relationship.
Oh, that's very important. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, thanks so much for talking to me.
You're very welcome. Enjoyed it.
I'm sitting here with David Draymer. It's the end of the conference, or nearly so. We encountered each other yesterday, and you just seem like an interesting and simpatico kind of person that I wanted to spend a little time with and talk with. And so you mentioned that you are a trauma psychologist, among other things, and here we are in the in the midst of all this positivity. What is a trauma psychologist?
Well, I work mainly with people who have post-traumatic stress disorder, dissociative disorders, and a variety of anxiety disorders. And we help people get back to life, whether they've encountered some kind of overwhelming life stressor, like combat PTSD situations, being involved in an automobile accident, being mugged, molested at some time in their life, and these overwhelming incidents just shock their system and their functioning goes way down. We help them get back to a normal life.
Now, you're a clinical psychologist, as I am, and what drew you into this area? How did it come about for you?
Well, actually, I was interested in optimal performance, as it turns out. And a colleague of mine asked me to go down to the University of Chicago with him and go study hypnosis. And we did, and we started learning about trauma and the need for services in this area at a time when there weren't a lot of people that were thinking about really good ways and new and novel ways to treat trauma and dissociative disorders. We eventually went to Harvard together and engaged in quite serious study of trauma, trauma treatment methods, novel methods, and came back and opened a trauma center at a time when we were told that that was not a legitimate area for clinical psychologists to be in.
Oh, my goodness. I've been interested in hypnosis myself. Is that a key component of your practice now or not?
Mainly in the form of providing guided imagery, and we don't do hypnotic regressions very much anymore because it's really not the purpose of doing trauma therapy today. Has gone from a place of trying to excavate trauma and just explore that to a place of trying to create stabilization for people. When they're in a bad place, the last thing you want to do is to go start uncovering more and more aspects of the trauma. What we want to do is get them to a place where they're really stable, where they have some emotional control, where they can do their own emotional regulation. And then, if we have to, we can go back and excavate that trauma from a place of strength, from a place of safety.
Yeah, I think people used to have the person go back and re-experience the trauma, and I guess more recently, our attention has been called to the possibility that people are being re-traumatized by reliving the trauma.
Oh, absolutely. And much of our early work came from therapists who had tried to deal with people's trauma, and they ended up re-traumatizing their clients. And they were also sort of vicariously traumatized by listening to that stuff. And they didn't have the right boundaries in place to be able to deal with it, nor the tools. And so as a specialty practice, we were able to focus on all sorts of very unusual methods, as well as some quite classical methods for helping people first find that stabilization and then go do the trauma work. Now, ultimately, like almost any anxiety disorder, the real treatment comes from exposure.
Okay, now you've just been, speaking of exposure, we've been exposed to 3 days of sitting in lectures and so on, coming out of this positive psychology movement. Have you acquired any new tools as a result of your participation here? Anything new that kind of gets you excited? Or does it more reinforce stuff you already know?
Well, there's so many new things that I've heard, and I am so overwhelmed at the end of these 3 days that it would be very difficult to point to any one of them. But I feel just buttressed by the sense that one of the things that we can do for our brethren is to instill hope, and we can find ways for people to live their lives with intention and purpose. And that just pervades this whole organization and this conference.
Well, David, thanks so much for sharing these observations. This will probably be my last interview for this trip, and it's a good one to wrap up with.
Thank you very much, David.
Hi, what's your name and where are you from?
Hi, my name is Renee McNair, and I teach at the Penn State Worthington Scranton campus.
And what's drawn you to this conference on positive psychology?
I teach, every spring I teach a positive psychology class called Positive Psychology and Well-Being. And I know that this conference, I went to the last one and it really enhanced my class.
Oh, that sounds great. And how did the students take to the class? I'll bet it's real popular.
It is. It's the most popular class that I teach. They love it. It fills up within a day. And I learn as much as they do from them. So it's a really great experience for the 15 weeks.
Is there anybody that you're particularly looking forward to hearing from at this conference?
Everyone, but I'm a big I'm interested in hearing Dr. Seligman. I use one of his books in my class.
Right. Okay, well, thanks so much for being willing to be on the mic.
Sure. Thank you.
Oh, great. Cool. Hi, who are you?
My name is Rose Gantner. I work for the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, the health plan in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
All right. And I understand that you're working on a book. I met your delightful sister, who is very social and outgoing, and she tells me that you're working on a book.
I'm excited. I've been in this field 35 years. My book is called Workplace Wellness, Performance with a Purpose, and I hope to have it finished in about 2 months, and it really covers on helping business leaders, CEOs, benefits specialists, HR people, and wellness practitioners help companies to become high-performing companies so that they can engage employees more and improve their productivity as well, besides decreasing healthcare costs.
Wow, that's a mouthful.
Yes, it is. It's a lot. But what's really nice, besides evidence-based research with strategies and tips and resources in it for anybody, it's like your little cookbook or your handbook. It also has testimonials and stories from some of the national business group companies and organizations, and successful stories, and then employees' testimonies of how those companies help turn them around to transform their lives and have healthier habits and attitudes and values.
Well, do you have some tips? What would be the headline of the two or three top things that people should do to create that kind of environment?
Oh, that's a great question. Number one is they have to learn a lot about resilience, because the more resilient you are, the more you're able to bounce back from adversity and from challenges. So it goes beyond stress management to resiliency and having a purpose in life and knowing what your purpose is and doing it with passion, but passion from a harmonious point of view of a better social good, and not from a destructive passion of something like an obsession where it's out of control.
Well, standing opposite you here, I get your passion. It really comes through.
It's from my heart and soul, and it was time to put it on paper and share it with others.
Yeah, good for you. And what brought you to this conference on positive psychology?
Oh, I've always been interested in this, and I'm a counseling psychologist as well, but I wanted to be able to learn some additional ideas and see what other latest research was to incorporate in our own programs to go beyond well-being and to see other campaigns that we can develop for our own people and our own employer groups.
Dr. Rose, so nice meeting you.
Real pleasure meeting you, sir, and thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, I'm standing in front of a poster here that says it's the influence of savoring on psychological resilience and mindfulness in distance runners. A lot of juicy words in there. I'm talking to Ryan Peterson, PhD candidate. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, so I think the key words for me as I look at this are savoring, resilience, and mindfulness. So what do you mean by savoring?
Yeah, there's a lot of topics up there. Savoring is sort of the ability to slow down and enhance the positive experiences that people may sort of go through in their daily lives. So,
you know, that's a word I've heard here in some of the main speaker presentations, and I thought I had been tracking positive psychology, but it was kind of a new concept for me, this idea of savoring.
Yeah, it's something that I think in today's world where, you know, we're bombarded with all kinds of emails and Facebooks and a moment-to-moment technology, that it's something that would really, really wake people up to kind of go about their day a little differently and take advantage of the smaller moments.
Exactly. And then you've got the idea of psychological resilience here, and that seems to be an increasingly important topic. Say something about resilience.
Well, resilience is the ability to sort of bounce back and steer through circumstances that may either be being stuck in the past or the present, or being worried about something. Really, the go-between here is the effect savoring has on positive emotion, and by increasing positive emotion, it therefore can impact or raise psychological resilience.
Okay, so tell us about your study, because there's some kind of research that you did here, and I see you measured resilience and you measured mindfulness. Quickly take us through the setup and what you found.
Yeah, I'll try and do it quickly. So it's a mixed method study, and the influence of savoring really, as I said, really influences the positive emotion. And if you look at the qualitative side, there's really a lot of different positive emotions that came from the experimental group, which is the savoring group, the group that got the savoring intervention. And not only did it influence the positive emotion, which upped psychological resilience, it also influenced mindfulness, which is sort of that sense of being in the present. So it kind of had a dual impact on the two constructs at one time.
Now, this was among distance runners. Why distance runners?
Yeah, so I'm in physical education. So the reason I chose runners is a lot of these are beginners and trying to sort of running can be very, you know, repetitive and kind of boring and you know, to stick with it you kind of have to have that resilience to stay with it and the more resilience you have, the more you may press on, the more you may continue with physical activity.
Yeah.
I need to go to another thing. Can I get a poster of this?
Okay, Ryan, thank you very much for talking to me.
No
I really
problem.
Like
no
hearing
problem.
About your study.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay, hi. Why don't you tell us your name?
Sheila Kuttner.
Okay, Sheila, I see that you're standing here by a booth called Fast Track Coach Academy.
Right.
I've been interested in the whole coaching phenomenon. Tell us about sort of what you teach, et cetera.
We teach, my partner Susan Sussman and I have an ICF-approved program. International Coach Federation program, which is the certifying body for coaches. And we provide 60 approved hours of towards certification. And it's in the form of 32-hour sessions, so that it's 60 hours of training. The first hour is didactic based on the manual. The second hour is practice, and that's what really grows people. And we have 96% of our graduates pass their ICF credentialing exam the first time. And it is on the a bridge line, so we have up to 12 participants, so everybody gets turns.
Okay, so it's distance education.
Distance
you could do it from anywhere in the world.
Israel, India, Korea, South America, Hawaii, and everywhere in the United States, Canada, all over the world.
Can I ask how much it costs?
It costs $3,600 for the 60 hours.
That sounds pretty reasonable, actually, for something that could perhaps lead to a whole new career.
Oh, it does lead to a whole new career. And we have many psychologists come through our program, PhD psychologists who've been trained to look for the problem. And coaching actually is based on the present and the future and is opportunity and solution oriented. So it's challenging for people really schooled in therapy to move their focus, we call it flip their focus, from what's the problem to what's the solution, what's the opportunity. And everything is based on positive psychology.
Well, that's a great wrap. Thanks so much,
You're
Sheila.
Welcome. Great. Thank you.
Okay, tell me your name and what you're up to.
My name is Sherry Wu. So I'm studying in Meaning Purpose Life subject well-being, also personal assessment.
Okay, and you're a master's student where?
University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign.
Okay, and what is it that you hope to do once you get your master's degree?
I would like to apply for a PhD program to continue my research in Meaning Purpose subject well-being.
Okay, well, tell me something about your research.
Actually, I look at the difference between meaning and purpose. Like, meaning is more about your matters. And the purpose is more about the superordinate structure of your goals. And we try to see, actually, my current research, see how do we test those subjective things. As you can see, meaning and purpose means different things to different people. And we would like to see how those tests, like life in purpose tests, sense of coherence, how they are validation. So we try to test more, like increase the reliability of those models and see its correlation with subjective well-being.
Well, it sounds like you're very interested in research. Do you plan to go on for a PhD?
Yes, that's what I said.
And do you see yourself as primarily going in a research direction, or are you also very interested in applied work with people?
I think that's the same concept. I think research, you also, this conference, you work with people. Actually, you like to teach people, influence people to help them to increase their subjective well-being, increase the life satisfaction. So it's no different.
Okay, what's the most exciting thing to you that you've heard in this conference so far?
I think most thing is internationalization of the well-being, because we do not only focus on the economic growth. We always see instead of the cure, the negative things like medicine intervention of psychology state, we also can instill those like positive thinkings. We can bring out the virtual goodness of people. Actually, it's the different way of psychology approach. Also, it brings a new perspective, those the world trend.
The internationalization is what you're talking about. Did I get that right?
I think more and more people are interested in to increase in the positive side of psychology, no matter where you come from, no matter background, no matter economic status.
Yeah, there are people here from 60 countries, which is wonderful.
Yes, yeah, great to see so many people here.
Okay, well, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, I'm sitting here at the lunch table talking to Stacy Greco, and we have interesting history. Stacy, maybe you can bring our listeners in on this.
Well, besides knowing your name from California fame, David, and from hearing about you in various trade associations throughout the years, like the QRCA, I saw you in person last year at a conference in Prague, where you were presenting about positive psychology and the effects of bringing happiness into our work as market researchers.
Yes, and so I learned that we both learned that we were coming to this conference on positive psychology in Philadelphia, and you let it be known to me that you had actually been influenced to apply to what is currently the original and major master's program in positive psychology at the University of Michigan, at the University of Pennsylvania. I got a little mixed up, having gone to both institutions.
Yes, so that's right. A lot has happened in less than a year. I think I saw you in Prague in November, October of last year?
No, it was summer. It was the summertime, I remember. It was probably July, somewhere in there.
Okay, so in about a year's time, I saw your presentation, heard you speak, took pictures somewhat illegally, I will admit, now of your PowerPoint presentation in the conference room, and got inspired to look into positive psychology and read everything I could about it and researched it and got just, again, so incredibly inspired by your talk and about the possibilities of bringing positive psychology into my work as a researcher that I applied to the University of Pennsylvania's program and in March, learned I was accepted in June, and am now burning my way through the reading list in preparation for starting classes in September.
Well, I just think that's so remarkable, and I think one piece of background that I omitted here is that we're both involved in market research, so my listeners know me primarily as a psychologist and a psychologist of broad interest, but I also do have a career in market research as a consultant, and you are a market researcher as well, working for a large company. So it's interesting that positive psychology and happiness has brought us together.
what a better topic to bring two people together. And, you know, it's something that I'm really excited about bringing into the larger spectrum of the industry that I practice in, because besides your work, nobody else is doing it. So it's very inspiring to me that I could be part of this movement that you've started.
Well, Stacy, I'm so glad that we were able to spend a little time together over lunch. And hopefully we're going to be collaborators down the line, and we're going to figure out, okay, how can we bring positive psychology into market research for the betterment of our clients and the planet?
I'm so excited to work with you, David. Thank you so much for the inspiration.
Thank you. Enjoy the conference. Hi, what's your name? I see you've got some kind of commercial-looking exhibit here, and it looks very intriguing to me.
My name is Susanna Spanton, and it's a card game that helps people identify all the different characters they play in the context of relationships, forming connections, and identifying the strengths that you have.
So what are some examples of some of the cards? I see some laid out here.
Well, we have the actor, the poet, the philosopher, the wanderer, the visionary, just to name a few.
And how would you use these then?
There's several ways. One of the most fun ways is to sit down with someone over coffee or a glass of wine and have an experience of playing the card game like a game. Yeah. And then there are some other therapeutic implications that other people have gotten creative and used it to facilitate conversation around strengths.
Oh, that's really fascinating. Now, what led you to do this?
Actually, I had a great interest in archetypes from Carl Jung.
And me too.
And I felt that I really felt compelled to create something that would be able to teach that in an ordinary type of way for both young people, whether you're 22 or 102, to have fun playing and discovering what archetypes are all about.
Well, that's really wonderful. You don't know me, so you don't know that I've taught a course on Jungian psychology for years at the university level, a course called Myth, Dream, and Symbol, and that I've conducted interviews, much like we're doing right now, with a lot of very prominent Jungians. So I'll be sure to give you my card so you can listen to the podcast.
And I'll be sure to give you mine.
Thank you very much. Okay.
I hope you enjoyed listening to these final snippets from attendees at the Second World Congress on Positive Psychology. I hope that they helped to convey both the excitement and the range of topics and interests represented at the conference. As I may have mentioned in previous episodes, there were about 1,200 attendees from over 70 countries. I had hoped to pair the short interviews you just heard with the keynote given by Dr. Richard Davidson, which I had recorded on my iPhone. However, I didn't get his permission to use that recording there, and he's not answered my email queries. Fortunately, I previously interviewed him, and you can hear that on Shrink Wrap Radio number 231, The Meditating Brain with Richard Davidson, if you haven't already listened to it. He's certainly one of the key pioneers of our day, researching the impact of meditation on the brain. And speaking of Richie Davidson, I finally got to see Happy the Movie last night, and Richie was one of the researchers featured in that film. You'll recall that I interviewed Rocco Bellick, the director of the film, on Shrink Wrap Radio number 271. Unfortunately, Rocco couldn't be at last night's local premiere, but one of his co-producers was, and also Michael Pritchard, a local comedian who's doing wonderful work with kids on issues around bullying. He's going to the schools and putting on programs. And Michael was also featured in the film, and you saw him working with kids. I approached Michael Pritchard after last night's screening about a possible interview. Amazingly, I discovered I had already interviewed about 6 or 7 of the people featured in the film. That discovery really gave me a sense that I'm somehow being guided to speak to the right people. Whether through guidance, synchronicity, or intuition, following my nose is leading me to some amazing and meaningful energy clusters. At any rate, Happy the Movie is relying on word of mouth for distribution. So do urge your local theaters to bring it to your area. and be sure to see it. You'll feel both uplifted and challenged by it. Now, speaking of happy, it so happens that about a week ago, I returned to the laughter yoga class led by local therapist and teacher Carmela Carlisle. Let's listen to the interview I conducted with some of the attendees at that session who were able to hang around after class. Carmela will be the last one you hear. Here's the interview. Okay, here we are at the laughter yoga session. A lot of laughers here, people who are laughter yoga teachers and devotees, and I wanted to hear from some individuals here. So the first person is?
Hi, my name is Donna Autry, and I also teach a laughter yoga class, but I do it in the water.
In the water. That sounds like a bumper sticker. I do it in the water.
It works out pretty good that way. Yeah, they're already bubbly, so it works out pretty good.
Well, what drew you to laughter yoga in the first place?
Oh, how did we find our way here? I don't remember how we found our way here.
Well, you're totally blissed out then.
<That's> so, <it. laughs>
how do you use it in the water? And of what value do you think it is?
Oh, I think I've seen your place. I work at a senior place, and the people's faces are just so surprised at one another to see each other's faces so full of cheer. And the idea of looking at each other as you laugh was a new concept, but when they all took to like fish to water.
Well, that sounds wonderful, because I've been in some old folks' homes, and they're not very cheery places in general.
And there we are, and I ask them to laugh for a minute, and I ask them to play with their floating device in a way that is funny. And I was so surprised they were so willing to do it. And when I told them that it would give them a 2 hours of pain-free living if they laughed for 2 minutes, they laughed right away.
Well, that's great. That's great. I wouldn't have thought that it would be an easy population to break into.
That's a good point. There are people who you ask them to laugh and they just freeze up. But, you know, it's contagious, and you see everybody else laughing, you can't help but start laughing.
Yeah, right. That's what we've been doing here this evening. Yeah. Who can I talk to next? Who would like to go next? You've been volunteered. Tell us your name and how you happen to be here.
My name's Rudy, and I came with my wife, Donna, and we came to a free class that Carmela was putting on at a senior hospice center here in Petaluma, and she said third Friday of every month is a hour-long laughter, and we started doing it, what, 8 months ago, six months ago? And we've been laughing ever since.
Well, that's great. That's great. And do you laugh at home?
I laugh at home. I laugh at work. I actually call a friend, and I just start out laughing. He knows who it is, and he laughs back, and we laugh for a while, and we both feel better, and you know, then we talk for a while, and then we go back to work.
That's great. I was on Carmela's website, and I saw something about a laughter phone line. And one of my listeners who responded to my interview with Dr. Madan Kataria said, boy, I live, I remember, it was like Mississippi or someplace like that. And he said, I don't know anybody who would laugh with me. I wish I could call somebody up, and they would just laugh with me. And then after that, I saw the phone number on your site. Do you have it memorized by any chance?
I do.
Well, okay, great. Wonderful. What is the phone number?
I believe it's 712-423-4116. Then when you get on the conference call, they say you have to give your number. And so then you say 60-712-92-pound.
Okay. evidently, this was written on the ceiling because I noticed you were staring at the ceiling the whole time. I will actually go online and verify it before I put this up there, so all my listeners will get the true scoop. Carmela, you want to get a word in here?
Well, yeah, I want to say that the Live Laughter Line was started by Gaga Barnes, who is a laughter yoga teacher down in Carlsbad, California. She's a colleague of mine, and I enjoy her laughter very much. And we have volunteer laughter yoga teachers from around the country who do shifts so that your listeners can tune in and enjoy talking and laughing for 20 minutes for free on that Live Laughter Line 12 times a day. So at 5 in the morning, you need a laugh, dial them up. 10 at night, you need a laugh, dial them up. We have laughter yoga teachers 12 times a day doing that, and it's that specific standard time for us. So sometimes when I call, there's people from Japan on there laughing. Sometimes there's people from Ohio. You just never know who's going to be on there laughing with you. And it's really healing, and it's a reminder that laughter's always accessible. For yourself, you can laugh alone, of course. That's what we encourage. But sometimes we need that little nudge. So Gaga Barnes and that telephone number, which is on my website, which is www.carmelacarlisle.com.
Okay, I may talk to you some more here. Okay, discount therapy. Absolutely free. What a deal. What a deal. I was talking earlier to you, Nicholas. You're a student at the local community college. Tell us a little bit about your interest in laughter.
Sure. I came tonight because I was in the class before this one, and I thought I would stay. I was like, laughter plus yoga, it's kind of genius. It's a great
idea. Yeah, so it makes sense, huh?
It really does. I think there's a real need for laughter in America, just people to let loose and... It's not so serious.
Right. Not just America either. I think this whole world could use laughter.
You're only allowed to laugh if you live in America.
Okay.
That's pretty laughable.
Now, tell us your name. We were laughing a lot about your gutters.
I'm just looking for anyone that wants to clean my gutters for the winter time. Last thing I want to do. No. This is my first time here, but I love to laugh, so.
Well, you entered right into it, so I would say that you do love to laugh.
I feel great. I mean, yeah, wonderful. The breathing and just the opening the throat. I feel like my chest tonight has, and I've been doing yoga practice again recently for a while, but I haven't opened my chest as much as I did tonight, so something broke through, which is great.
Oh, wonderful,
so,
wonderful.
Know, some grief that was holding on there, so I really, it was just what I needed tonight, so. Yeah. Thank you.
That's good to know.
I'm going to be a teacher now. I'm going to go out and teach everybody to laugh. I think that'd be cool as hell.
So. Okay, so you're going to sign up for the teacher training?
Oh, yeah. I work with seniors, and there's some, you're so right. I mean, they'll are open to these kinds of things, and it's not, you know, very aerobic. I mean, it is aerobic, but without feeling aerobic or feeling aggressive. It's very passive, but very good for the circulation, and my heart is beating good right now, and I'm exhausted, so.
Excellent, excellent.
Energized.
And who's this sitting beside you?
It's me. I'm Brigitte Appleton, and people have been laughing at me as long as I lived on this earth, so I decided I'm going to come and find out how to laugh at other people, too.
So what's tonight your first night?
This was my first night. I've practiced regular yoga for a few years. And I never really knew about laughter yoga until a few weeks ago, actually. But we like to laugh, and the more I laugh as much as I can every day.
Okay, so let's assume that tomorrow you see a friend. What are you going to tell them about what you did tonight?
Get out of the gutter. Right. Now, what would I tell
That's an inside joke based on something else that happened earlier.
What did you say? I was too busy laughing.
How would you describe it to a friend, what you did tonight?
That it was really, it was interesting to me, and also I liked the theatrical part of it. I think it was fun to be a cow and a cat and to do fun things that I can't explain.
Okay, okay. But somebody over here is spitting into her cup. She's going to have tea coming out of her nose in a moment, so this is a perfect time.
Hello.
Hello. Tell us something.
Oh, well, I'm not a teacher. I'm just addicted to
Oh, really?
Yoga.
Is this not your first time?
No, it's not. I no longer virgin to laughter yoga. I've got to say that laughter yoga raises your vibration, and it lasts quite a while. It's not, it doesn't go away. Tomorrow I'm going to be feeling this.
Yes, good. Wonderful, wonderful. What are some other benefits you've noticed?
It puts me in a good mood. I always know I can do this at a moment's notice.
You have your laughter with you. It's all everywhere you go.
I can, well, not everywhere. I'm still working on that, but no, it's a tool. It's an alternative. You can always seek it out and have access to it.
Okay. It looks like I've touched on everybody who's here. And, Nicholas, you want to say another word?
I wanted to give some insight that in the class, it was really neat to see the connection of all the people, just how we broke down. First it's like laughter yoga, kind of awkward. And then it's like, wait a second, we could all be friends. We're probably neighbors. We live in Petaluma. I was just like, this is really healing. And it's an energy for the whole city. It's just like it's happening in the West Coast, but what about the East Coast? What about the South, where I'm from? Like, the rest of the world needs laughter yoga.
Yeah,
see it to understand.
I'm glad that you brought out the
clubs of this around.
Yeah, there are lots.
And it's in 78 countries.
Yeah, so it is around. So I really like the point that you brought out that I think we're mostly strangers, and due to Carmela's magic here, she's the teacher who led us through a delightful evening. So I'd like to hear a bit more from you, Carmela. I know that you've trained a lot of students and that many of them are doing very interesting applications. Maybe you could take us through some of your favorite ones.
Well, hi. Thanks for being here and coming to a couple sessions. I just want to say, first of all, that, you know, laughter yoga is not new. It's an ancient tradition. And so, like Nicholas, for instance, was here for Kundalini yoga before this class. And laughter yoga has its roots in Kundalini and Tibetan yoga. So it's an ancient form. And yet, when folks are doing the moves that I'm adapting with laughter, I think it's very accessible. Would you all agree that it's accessible,
yeah,
I think
very,
is the word, that,
yeah,
that it makes yoga accessible to everyday folks, but I think the benefits are immense, and they're deep, and they're long-lasting, and they're neurochemical. So you get a high, like Becky was saying. It's not like just now you are releasing serotonin that most people report that they sleep better and that they feel better throughout the evening the next day.
I think people who are involved in spiritual practices, often there's a kind of sanctimonious kind of air around it all where you have to be very serious. So that's one of the things that appeals to me about this is I think this can be a legitimate spiritual practice.
Yeah, I think that we're not precious about it. At least I try not to be precious about it. I think that, for me, I'm a humanist, and I think that human beings really undersell themselves, ourselves, on what really the joy is that is within us all. And I think that laughter makes the joy accessible to us without having to follow any spiritual role or any teacher or guru. Our teacher, Dr. Madan Kattari, is a medical doctor in India who is researching the benefits of this through science. So science and medicine tells us how good this is for human beings.
Yeah, now, the last time we were together, you were sharing with me some of the amazing things that some of your students are doing out in the world. So I want to bring you back to that question, if I may.
Okay. So some of the leaders I've trained, like myself, I teach laughter yoga in a multitude of venues, as do the people I train. I have a training coming up in October here in Petaluma. I have trained people from all over the country. Donna teaches laughter yoga in a swimming pool with aquatics, you know. Julia teaches laughter yoga. Yoga too with children and yoga students. I work with nurses in hospitals where we're doing laughter in the infusion centers in hospitals. We're finding that it oxygenates the blood and it enables people to better accept chemotherapy and more effectively. Also dialysis. I have trained doctors who are now using laughter yoga as physicians. An example is Dr. Om Rawal. He uses it to calm people before their MRI. Eyes, so they can relax and be able to stay still through an MRI. I have trained people who are leaders in organizational settings where they start every staff meeting with a round of laughter. Just begin your meeting with laughter. I have trained people who are in business settings, medical settings. One of my students is a certified laughter yoga leader, speech therapist. And she's working with using laughter with children to release the tension in their throats and to help people who stutter in the school system.
That all sounds wonderful. And I remember last time I was here, there was a young man who is in a 12-step program. Maybe you can tell us a bit about that.
Yes. Two of my students, laughter yoga leaders, are using laughter in recovery groups, which is brilliant. As Sam says, people in recovery need a good laugh.
Yeah.
And indeed they do. Indeed that we all do. But the chemical changes and the stress of recovery, laughter is perfect to get that endorphin high and the neurochemical changes in a self-medicating good way.
What about PTSD? Do you know anybody who's working with PTSD or returning vets?
Yeah, well, I do. I'm training 20 therapeutic directors over at the VA in Yountville to introduce laughter and to integrate it into their entire veterans program for PTSD.
Excellent. So it seems like one's imagination is the limit. There are no limits.
There are no limits. And, you know, Dr. Dave, I say to everyone out there, no matter who you are or what you do in life, you can introduce laughter into your families, I mean into your church community, into the school system. I think that there's a place to integrate non-conditional laughter for everyone in all of our lives. Children don't laugh like they used to. Families don't laugh together like we used to. I think that introducing laughter is something that all of us can benefit from.
Yeah, there was an exercise introduced. I don't remember if it was you or one of your students tonight, imagining somebody was tickling us. And it took me back to when I was a child, and I remembered, you know, how just uncontrollably you would laugh when you were being tickled. So I think that's a good note for us to close on, and maybe we can close on some good group laughter here so that people can really get the feeling. Okay, this is Dr. Dave from the Health Asylum.
Well, there you have it. I hope this conversation gives you a feel for the experience. We had hoped that more of Carmela's laughter yoga teachers would be able to stick around, but some had to leave early or were perhaps a bit mic shy. For those of you who have difficulty finding a local laughter club, let me give you that laughter phone number again that I read out on the last show. The phone number in the U.S., and I think it's Central Time, is 712-432-3900. And there's an access code, which is 6071292. And the times are 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 a.m., then 12 noon, 1, 5, 6, and 10 p.m. I have yet to remember to try it myself, but if you do, let me know how it goes for you.
That's right. Shrink Wrap Radio. Coming at you now. Yo, everybody, let's get down. There's a new MC in town. Talking psychology interviews. Dr. Dave is all the rave. Ain't no slouch on the digital couch. He's on the pod. Podcast got the pod. Yeah. You want to be in the know? No. Talking shrink wrap radio. Shrink wrap radio. I'm talking shrink wrap radio. Shrink wrap radio. I'm talking shrink wrap radio. Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. All right.
Well, speaking of wraps, I'm talking apps. iPhone app and Android app. You recall that last time I put out a call to you to see if there was anyone out there who could build us an iPhone app for shrink wrap radio. Well, I also advertised on Craigslist and Elance.com and discovered that it can be quite expensive to get an iPhone app developed. Even outsourcing the work to India is not all that cheap. I was getting quotes in the $3,500 to $5,000 range, which we do not have that kind of budget. Undaunted, I am moving ahead with an ISP I've worked with in the past, who for $20 a month, plus a third of the proceeds, will create both an iPhone app and an Android app. I've gone ahead and committed to the $20 a month. All in all, that seems like a good deal, assuming you folks want the app badly enough to pay the $2.99 it will cost to download it. That's $2.99, not $299. The process of getting it built and approved may take months, but I'll do my best to push it forward, and you can bet I'll keep you updated on the progress. On another front, I've put up a second CE course, that's continuing education course, on Jungian psychotherapy through the Zur Institute. So now we have Jungian psychotherapy, understanding the Jungian worldview for 6 CE units, and Jungian psychotherapy, exploring Jungian archetypes for 7 CE units. And you can get these just by listening to interviews and taking an easy true-false quiz at the end of the course. And this could be of value not only to professionals in social work, nursing, MFTs, marriage family therapists, and so on, but also to students as something to put on your, on your grad school applications or to get a certificate of completion to hang on your wall. It's relatively inexpensive to do this. Now, you can get more details by clicking on the store tab or the badge in the right-hand sidebar on our site, or by going to www.zurinstitute, that's Z-U-R, institute.com/dvannuys.html. And help get the word out, if you will, if you wouldn't mind Twittering or retweeting or Facebooking about these courses and about Shrink Wrap Radio. That's always very much appreciated. Finally, I've created some new categories on our donations page. I've decided to use the hierarchical scheme from the world of olives, namely large, jumbo, colossal, and super colossal. The super colossal donation is $30 a month for 12 months. And as an incentive for donating at that level, I'm offering to mention your name, business name, product, blog, or website on every episode for a year. In other words, this would be a very economical advertising opportunity for any of you who have something you want to advertise, even if it's just your name. So thanks to all of you who have already made one-time or ongoing donations, and those who can't afford to do so, no guilt. And those who can afford to do so, and or mean to, but keep forgetting or putting it off, well, you know, the big green donate button in the right-hand sidebar.
Hi, this is Lindsay Duran. I'm the producer of Sense and Sensibility and Stranger Than Fiction, and you're on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Thank you, Lindsay Duran, who I'm excited to say will be my guest on the next episode. More about that later. First, let's check out a few emails from our listener community. First, we hear from Layla in Albuquerque, who sent the following note along with her contribution. She writes, "Thanks so much. I'm learning so much through your interviews about myself and about the world of mind science. I'm also considering a PhD in a psychology-related field. Thanks again for helping me to learn about myself." Well, Layla, thank you, and thanks for clicking on that big green donate button. Next, we hear from Justin, who replied to my thanks for his donation, and Justin writes, "No problems, it was about time. I've been listening for so long and just never got around to it yet. It's great value for the money for what we get, and I'd hate to see you stop producing podcasts in the future, so anything I can do to help. Thanks, and keep up the great work, Justin." And Justin, thanks to the support of you and others, I will do my best to keep on keeping on. Next, we hear from Peter B. Todd in Australia, a longtime listener now, and my guest on episode number 240, Unconscious Mental Factors in HIV Infection. And Peter writes, "Dear David, congratulations on developing your APA-accredited online continuing education course, Jungian Psychotherapy, Exploring Jungian Archetypes for Psychologists and Other Professionals. And many thanks for including the component concerning my published work on a Jungian view of HIV as a shadow, alternative approaches to treatment, which we explored during our podcast interview in episode number 240. I believe that your course as a whole will really raise collective consciousness about Jung's archetypal psychology and its applications in psychotherapy outside of strictly Jungian circles. It would be of immense interest to psychoanalytically oriented psychologists in Australia while providing an awakening to psychoanalytic thinking for cognitive behavioral therapy practitioners. Since I last communicated with you, I've submitted a paper on the operational analysis and measurement of unconscious mechanisms and processes to the International Journal of Psychoanalysis, where a revised version is now under review. I've also submitted a book manuscript, The Evolution of God, to Spring Journals and Books for consideration. This manuscript contains an elaborate treatment of the themes in the paper Unconscious Mental Factors in HIV Infection, published in the Mind and Matter Journal. However, with a very specific emphasis upon archetypal symbolic experiences of the numinous in dream work and psychoanalytic psychotherapy. The manuscript also contains some controversial material on experimental evidence of non-random or directed mutation in the evolution of microorganisms involving a quantum computing model of information processing, and the Hilly and Pilkkinen notion of a minefield as a perspective on the unconscious compatible with developments in quantum information theory published in Mind and Matter during 2005. Physicist Pauli wrote of a U-field to refer to the unconscious as the psychological analogy of the physical field concept in his collaboration with Jung on the complementarity relationship between mind and matter. I do hope that your podcast and your new online course have a transformative influence for all who hear them. Kind regards, Peter B. Todd." Well, Peter, thank you for updating us on all these new developments. Boy, you're really moving ahead full steam, I must say. And you submitted to some prestigious Jungian journals. And I certainly hope that those things come to fruition. Peter also contacted me later to let me know that he was letting people in Australia, particularly in the Jungian Society there, know about my online CE course offerings. So I really appreciate that effort as well. Okay, so we better wrap that up here. As always, you can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. You can leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. You can leave voicemails on Skype, where I'm ShrinkPod, and you can leave voicemail on our phone at 206-337-0622. Thanks again to all those at the World Congress on Positive Psychology who allowed me to interview them, as well as Carmela Carlisle and her students who spoke about laughter yoga. My next episode will feature an interview with Hollywood producer Lindsay Doran, who has worked on such box office hits as Sense and Sensibility and Ferris Bueller's Day Off, among others. We'll be discussing what Hollywood knows about the ingredients that make audiences happy. So until then, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
You've been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.